I was just starting the recording. Go ahead, Will.
Yeah, no, it's always nice on the other hand as well that he reached out to us. So our phone rang, and he reached out to us and said, hey, I want to meet you guys, which I would say 95% of our relationships are us reaching out to them. And so there's a need for this guy, and he reached out to us, so it's trending in the right direction. So we'll see, and we'll update you, I guess, on our next monthly call on how this one goes. But it was we knew you would like it because one, it was a unsolicited referral from a client who just said, hey, the guy that contacted us was referred by someone who was already with Northwestern Mutual, and our existing client said, no, you should not continue going there. You need to reach out to the guys that I work with. So that's good.
Yeah. Just to clarify, so when this person called in, Andrew did a discovery call?
Yeah. So what happened is the guy reached out to Andrew. He was in a meeting. They organized just a quick little call just to kind of just touch base and just say, hey, kind of get to know each other a little bit just to at least talk. And then the guy said, he said it would make sense if we can meet, and they were supposed to meet yesterday, and he rescheduled to this morning. And so after quantifying his needs and hearing about absolutely everything, John and Andrew recognized that they should both go.
If a client needs second to die insurance, do you do that internally, or do you bring somebody in?
So we'll recognize the need, but we have a partnership with outside firms that we can work with at UBS that are on our platform that are specialists on the matter. But typically what happens is, whether through a monthly call or with a meeting like today, they realize that the guy has no insurance and he's got an insurance hole to fill, and then they'll pretty much communicate all of the needs and this guy's situation to the guy we work with, and then we'll partner with a specialist.
Okay. All right. Makes sense. All right. Anything else that you or Izzy or Ashley would like to talk about before I get started?
No, nothing particular. The markets have not been favorable, but it's been a good excuse for us to reach out to clients and just talk to clients. We'll send our monthly performance reports this Thursday for the first of the month, and that will be I'm sure we'll have a little bit more touch points for some more clients who maybe have not been paying as much attention to the markets, that it's not as been favorable, but it is a good sign, and we always are always shocked that we haven't had – our phones are not ringing off the hooks. We've maybe had one or two calls just touching base worried, but everything's going good so far. I feel like Ashley is doing a great job and also doing a great job of Izzy's been here for, it seems like maybe, I'm not sure, maybe 3 to 5 months. The time's gone by fast, but I feel like our team is really jiving well, and everyone, when something happens, people know how to handle it the best, and there's not much discussion on who handles what, which shows that we're kind of all jiving really well. So everything's going well so far.
Here's something that I don't want to use the word caution, but just point out. The reason that people – here's been my experience. Back in the market crash of 87, the market was down 23% in 3 days, and people panicked. I mean, you can't be down 23% and not have people panic. And as we've gone on from that time, people have seen the market come back.
Right.
And some FAs, and I know you all don't do this, some FAs get into that trap of saying, oh, it'll come back. And that's what I believe. That's probably what you believe. But it doesn't always come back quickly. So there's this first wave where everybody is, well, I know, I don't like it being up 300 and then down 300 all in one day and all that stuff, but it's always come back, so I'm just going to kind of wait for it to come back. And then you have that second wave where people say, wait a minute, this time it's different.
Right, yes.
Yeah.
Because people aren't loading up the phone lines doesn't mean they won't load up the phone lines later.
Right. No, so I agree.
What an FA doesn't want to fall into is, don't worry, don't panic, everything's going to be okay. That works the first time around, but if it continues, they're looking for a little more specific guidance.
I agree.
Make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay. I've got a lot to cover here, folks. My wife and I just got back from 5 weeks in Europe. Two-thirds of the time was in the UK, and the rest was in Belgium and Luxembourg and the Netherlands. If you ever have clients who are planning the trip, I'd be happy to share some pretty special places. I worked on this was a 50th wedding anniversary trip, but I worked on it for like 9 months. We drove.
That's awesome.
That is. We drove 3,700 miles. Saw a lot of things that were just really cool. So if you ever have client, like we've got a good friend of the family who wants to see all our itinerary and everything because they're getting ready to go and they want to learn. So I just offer that. We just had a really special time. All right. I'd like to follow up on a couple things that we discussed from our last call. Some of these, answer them as best you can. I think you're going to know all the answers. John had to leave the last call, Will, because he had a scheduled client call. Every call that John has scheduled or Andrew has scheduled is scheduled for them isn't a portfolio review, is it?
No. So it is depending on the topics that are pertinent to this client. It's not talking about a portfolio review, talking about asset allocation. John could be talking about a 529 analysis. He could talk about an insurance need. He could be talking about the last time they talked about paying down the line and how is that real estate project. I would say 95% of the conversations both Andrew and John have are about anything but the money, where maybe 5% of the conversations, if the client brings it up or if it's necessary, are about performance, asset allocation, what's doing well, what's doing wrong. But they have a gamut of topics that they talk about that are not about a portfolio review.
Here's the point for asking that question, and you gave me a great answer, is you can't allow these to turn into a touch call where there's no subject, there's no – it's just, hey, how are you? Everything okay? Good. Well, we'll talk next month. That's not value added. There has to be a subject. It doesn't always have to be about investments, but there always has to be something specific to talk about. What I hear you saying is that's the case right now.
Right.
All right. John also mentioned that every day he gets a list of people that he needs to call. Is Andrew getting a list also?
Yes. So the way it works is, and Ashley can probably talk about it more than I can in more detail, but basically Ashley is working with John on holding him accountable. Say John goes to this meeting today, just for an example, and says, I want to reach out to this guy for every 2 months or every 1 month. And so Ashley holds him accountable, and that day, a month later, she'll go to him and say, hey, you told me to tell you to reach out to him, and today's the day to reach out to him. Izzy is doing the same thing for Andrew. Andrew and Izzy have a little bit more volume on business development, and the number of people they're contacting and prospects, so they have a system as well that follow up, cold emails, warm emails, when you told me to follow up, exactly the same as John, but probably on a little bit bigger scale.
So these calls, are they on the client's calendar also?
So no, I'm sorry, this is more what I was talking about was more prospects. So these are prospects that maybe that's what he was talking about, that each maybe once a month or whatever have an excuse to contact or ping a prospect, and the same thing for Andrew. So that's what I was talking about. But John does have when we do those monthly calls, it is documented on both the client's calendar and John's calendar, and then also Ashley does a good job of confirming them each Friday the week before.
Yeah.
Okay. Is doing them on Friday, you could be confirming a call that's on Monday, Ashley. Am I hearing that right?
Yeah, so Fridays what I've been doing is just sending out the confirmations for the next week. So their call may not be till next Thursday, but I still send it on Fridays. And it's I think some clients have started to expect my email with the confirmation. So, you know, some reply if they need to change it. You know, others, if they don't reply, we just continue forward and John gives them a call. So it seems to be working with the Fridays. I don't know if you think there's a better day to do it, but it seems to just take the week ahead, and then that's really when I can look in to see if is there a conflict, is there something that's not going to work, and kind of go from there and restructure anything if we need to.
Actually, I'm a big fan of whatever works. Here's the reason I brought it up. If you're making these calls on a Friday, these confirming calls.
Oh, I usually email to confirm.
Okay.
I don't call them to confirm.
Getting in front of sending out the email on a Friday for a call that might be on Monday, you haven't had any problem with that not being enough lead time?
I haven't. Not that I'm aware of. I haven't. Usually it's if they don't see it on Friday, they'll see it on Sunday. And then if there's anything we need to change, they'll either reply then or we can look at it Monday morning. Some of them are early, like 8 or 8:30, so it seems to be helpful.
All right. Let me just, if that's working, I don't want you to stop. Let me just give you one thought. If it isn't working, if it gets to where people aren't getting enough lead time, a better idea might be.
Mm-hmm.
5 business days ahead of time. If somebody's got a call on Monday, you let them know the five.
The Monday before.
Yeah, just 5 business days before the call. The type of people that you all are dealing with, I know are busy, got a lot of things on their calendar, and there may be cases where, you know, one business day isn't enough time for them to adjust. I'll go back and say it again. If it's working, you know, leave it alone, but you may come to a point where you think it's better to do it 5 business days ahead of the call.
Yeah, that's a good point. I know most of the calls that John has with the clients, they actually have the call on their calendar too, so they get the meeting invite as well. So usually that helps them as well, just see that it's on there. But I get what you're saying. If Friday isn't enough lead time, maybe look at going to 5 business days before if they need to reschedule. I don't think we've had any issues with it so far. Will, I'm not sure if you...
No, I agree. I agree, and I agree with Rob's...
I think it's a good point, though, Rob, to give them more lead time. And then, you know, because I always face this thing that if I send them all on Friday and I start getting these emails back of people wanting to reschedule, and then if you know, I leave Friday afternoon, and then they reply over the weekend, and then John thinks he has a call Monday at 9, and then he really doesn't, but he prepared for it. That is something that just I'm thinking of has come up before. So doing the 5 business days before would kind of alleviate that, I think.
Well, it makes more sense to me. If you really think about it, if you email somebody on Friday at noon about an appointment 8 o'clock on Monday, that's like 4 business hours. Before the call. So I've made a point. Again, I'm not saying change it. I'm just saying you might come to a point where it's a little smoother to do it 5 days ahead of time. Now, you explained the prospects to me. Ashley's holding John accountable. Izzy's doing the same for Andrew. Ashley, are you having any trouble getting these calls made, or John and Andrew on top of it? What we don't want to do is set an expectation, and then you disappoint the client.
So with the monthly calls, you know, they're very on top of it. John, there's been no issues with, like, John not calling somebody, and we confirm it with the prospects. Since that's not confirmed with the prospect, it's not as big of an issue with them not expecting it. But John and Andrew both are good at staying accountable. Like, we're like, hey, you need to email this person. They're good about following up with that and getting it done. So I don't think we luckily haven't run into any issues where I confirm something and then, you know, John just doesn't do it, which I can be awkward if that happens, but I don't think we've run into that so far.
I wouldn't suspect you would, but again, it's better not to promise something to a client than promise it not deliver it. I don't sense that's happening. Now, Ashley and Izzy, and I guess I'd ask Will this question too. Part of our goal here is to get Andrew and John 100% into growing the practice, not get them stuck in administration. I know every once in a while you never can get to 100, but we want to get to close to 100% as possible. Do you all see Andrew and John doing things that take them away from that goal of being 100% in a growth mode?
I'll speak first. I think that we have made a lot of improvement in that area. And so John is a little bit more old school, where he is coming to grips and understanding that he doesn't need, for example, he should be out doing meetings and should be out doing stuff to grow the business and talking to clients, and he does not need to get into the weeds of a lot of stuff. And Andrew has recognized that he as well as should not get into the weeds, and that's not one of his strengths. And so I think Izzy and Ashley and myself have helped them recognize, and they now we have the infrastructure and have the ability to any of the stuff that they should not be doing that's not directly helping grow the business or maintain the business, they've recognized to pass along to us. And so a classic example was this morning. A client has, for the past month and a half, cannot understand the – it's a very simple question, but basically can't understand the statement about basically just how we calculate performance. He's calculating it himself. And so what John does, and he's not showing that he's handing it off in front of the client, but basically he just forwards to me. I write a synopsis or something like that, run it by him, and then he sends it from his email and CCs me. So stuff like that that he should not have to spend time getting in the weeds on, and I can spend the 30 minutes writing up the email, explaining it to him, and so that's a system that has worked.
That sounds like a perfect example, a perfect scenario. John wouldn't be very good at that. He wouldn't be happy while he was doing it. You can do it.
Yeah, he would.
And the important thing is, Will, that you all – I mean, John stressed last time. I used the term who works for who, and John didn't like it. And I get
right.
There has to be good communication. If any of the three of you see those guys doing something that you think keeps them away from their stated goal, not your goal for them, but their stated goal of being 100% in growth, it sounds to me like you all have the comfort of calling them on it.
Right. No, that's agree. And then another, to add to the point, I think our philosophy is with this, like with getting them out of the weeds, is another thing that this whole scenario helps with is kind of showing if the client with this example, it would be wrong for me just to respond to show that John can't spend the time to explain a performance. So I'll write the email and he'll send it and CC me just to have me in the loop. But another thing is that what we like to do is show that our team is completely capable of everything and we have an impressive team. So a lot of the times when it's not just handing it off blatantly in front of the client, but whether we like to say, hey, well, Izzy or Ashley's going to help with this. We're on it. And then Ashley kind of, that's us showing the client that we're passing the baton to them. We're still, but it also shows to the client as well that we're it's a collaborative effort. There's five of us total behind the scenes making sure that we're helping you and your account is the way it should be. So that's another thing that we kind of liked, and it's kind of been a indirect positive from this whole kind of stuff of getting John and Andrew out of the weeds, is that we're showing that Izzy and Ashley and myself are capable and are able to help them as well or as maybe even better than John and Andrew spend the time getting in the weeds about a specific thing.
Will, it also gets you a little FaceTime.
It'll exactly.
More FaceTime with the client, which is, I think, is really, really important. And we've talked about that before, that they know who you are and what your capabilities are.
Right.
When it's really working is when they call in and John's not there and they ask for you. That's
right.
That's when you know you got it. All right. Quickly, did somebody say something?
No, I was just agreeing with
okay.
That statement,
all right.
So,
you got to march toward $100 million in new money. Last time you told me you were at 68. Any additions?
So on the whiteboard right now is $71,253,000. So I'm not sure what the $2 million might have just been deposited. It was a $2 million client that we had is agreed and we have been pretty much talking to and trying to push along, and it's been a while over at another investment banking firm that has strict compliance, and he wanted to diversify. So we just got a $2 million deposit from that client, and he is expecting to make it. It's definitely going to grow. So that was good to see that email deposit after dripping on him and playing phone tag and just trying to get in contact with him. It's been about 3 years, I think.
Well, we know that increase isn't market appreciation, don't we?
Right, yes, we do know that, yes. So our book, you're exactly right. Our assets have gone down just because of market, but the net new money doesn't. It's nice that doesn't change due to the markets.
In our first meeting was November 21st of last year, and y'all told me that your motivation for spending the time and the money on Supernova was to play to your strengths. We've had some good discussions around that. I just want to hear the strengths as I see them. John and Andrew, growth. Will, a great utility player as you grow in the business. Ashley and Izzy, organization. That to me is you're playing to those strengths. Would you agree, Will?
I would 100% agree, and I think the time that we have spent with you and just kind of actually talking about it and focusing on it has, in my opinion, really improved everything. So yes, I agree.
You're kind to say that. Thank you. All right, let me talk a little bit about service. As I see it, there are two levels of service, folks. The first level is the blocking and tackling, to use a old sports analogy. That's doing making sure nothing falls through the cracks. You do what you say you're going to do when you're going to do it. Calls are returned on a timely basis. Requests are completed quickly. I think a client has the right to assume they're going to get that type of service. A lot of them don't, but I think that's just, they have the right to think that you're going to do the basics and do them well. Would you agree with that?
100%, yes.
Yeah, not everybody gets it, but everybody, I think it's fair for people to assume they're going to get that type of service. The service that really differentiates a practice, especially at the level of client that you all have, is what some people call just wow service. It knocks your socks off. A client who receives that kind of service knows they're getting something special. Let me give you an example from our trip. We stayed at a place called the Gravetye Manor. It's about 35 miles outside of London. It's owned by a hedge fund manager out of London. It's Gravetye, just like a grave, T-Y-E. It's not a hotel. It's an experience. And that's what I'm talking about here with the next level of service. Dealing with you all is an experience. Let me just give you an idea what this was like, and then I'm going to tie it back to the second level of service. This place was a couple hundred acres, 35 miles from London, as I said. You enter through a very handsome gate. As you drive up to this manor that was built in 1586 or something like that, nothing's out of place. There was no paper on the drive. It was nothing was out of place. When we pulled up to the front, two bellmen, they were like they were spring-loaded coming out of the door to help us take care of the luggage. King took my luggage, delivered to the room. It wasn't one of those things that, you know, somebody gets it out of your car, takes it to the front counter, that person gives it to somebody else. No, one person was responsible. The lady who checked us in, her name was Sarah, was expecting us. She showed us around the hotel, gave us a little, like a dance card with our dinner times. She also just handed us an adapter, because they have different plugs in the UK, just handed it to us, thought we might need one. The staff called us by name. I ended up knowing their name. Sarah was at the front desk. Tom was one of the bartenders. Christopher was one of the restaurant managers, and the general manager, a guy named Andrew, was always around. I probably had three conversations with him. Breakfast and dinner were fabulous. They grow their own vegetables. We walked through the walled garden where the gardeners were. There wasn't a weed in the place. On the second night, we didn't want a big dinner. They told us they'd make something light for us, just whatever we wanted. I never had to sign for anything. They knew who I was. I mean, I paid at the end, but it just was so. When we checked out, my wife Anna was given a gift. So as you can see, I'm a raving fan of Grey Tie Manor. Anna wants to take two of my granddaughters there so they can experience it. It just it was. We stayed in some great places, but this was. This was a step above a great place. So I think you can see where I'm going here, folks.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And let's look at the second level of your practice. Again, the basics, people deserve to think they're going to get that. In many cases, your basic service is better than other people's what a prospective client is getting right now. So I'd like to challenge you to develop that level of service with your client, and just to, as you think about that, and I know Will, you hadn't had any chance to think about it, but can you think of something you may be doing it now that it takes your practice to that second level of service?
Yeah, I actually, this is a topic that I actually really do enjoy, and I think we have improved on. And but yeah, so for In office meetings, we have a good system down that whether Ashley or Izzy are the point of contact for those families. We do have someone at our front desk, but we prefer around that time period either Ashley or Izzy will meet them by name. They will already have their materials. We'll have. If we know what drink they prefer, we'll have that. If not, we have UBS logoed water, so it's not just normal water. So the meeting place looks like we put 5-10 minutes of thought before they got there with a notepad and a pen. We greet them by name, walk them to whether the meeting room is or whatever, wherever the setting of the meeting is, and offer them whether it's coffee or other soft drinks or whatever, else drink that they may prefer. But I think that stuff is very important, and I think we've got a good system down that is just kind of shows that, hey, we're ready for you. We know your name. We'd like to make sure that you feel completely comfortable during the meeting. That's one thing. Another thing is just a simple thing for birth dates. Whether it's if it's an older client, we reach out to all the clients. If it's an older client, they all enjoy just a quick call, just saying happy birthday. We hope you have a great day. If it's a busy investment banker, just a quick email. Hope you have a great day. Happy birthday. Stuff like that is, and I completely agree with you. When you were telling that story, it's almost like when you go to that Masters golf tournament. There's not one guy that's not in a good mood. They make, and this is a terrible example, but it's not though. But when you use the restroom at the Masters, they make it an unbelievable experience with these guys working in there, just saying funny jokes, showing you which one's open, which it's everyone's laughing while in the long line to use the restroom at the Masters, which is just another example why that whole golf tournament is unbelievable. So I completely agree with you, and I think there are some other stuff that you can go like a little bit beyond and above that maybe we should start like just noting or considering.
Well, just a couple of things. Go ahead.
Oh, Izzy,
sorry,
Izzy just jumped on.
Izzy, how are you? Sorry, I've been on the call for 5 minutes, but. Just a quick question for you. So where do we draw the line? Because I feel like sometimes it's, you know, a client might be overwhelmed. It'll be too much. Is there a line we don't want to cross?
Izzy, can you give me an example of what that might look like?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't have anything in mind, but I feel like some clients, don't like a lot of attention or don't like a lot of emails, perhaps. Like we're thinking about sending, you know, marketing materials for specific clients that we know they're interested in, you know, a sector or something going on in the market. But I've been debating this with Will. Should we, you know, be sending them emails on a monthly basis
with you know, marketing materials and documents they might be interested in, but would that be a lot? Because some of them, you know, they don't like getting emails. They want to reduce, you know, the amount of emails they're getting in their inbox. But and then prospecting as well, you know, sending hard copies to their house. I mean, I would appreciate that. That would draw my attention, but maybe not others. Like, where do we draw the line? How do we?
I think it's a really good question. You can, one way to wear clients out is by talking to them, and I touched on this a minute ago with Will, and not really have anything to talk about. People are busy.
Yeah.
They don't need to make talk. Now, the real answer to your question is it's on an individual basis.
Yeah.
And a good question would be, and I'll obviously make this up, but you've been part of our practice for 6 months. I know you receive email from us from time to time. Some of it's regulatory, but some of it's discretionary. Is the amount of mail, the way we're communicating, is that fitting what you're looking for? No, Izzy, everything's – no, I don't think y'all are throwing too much mail at me at all. So I think it's an individual
yeah.
thing. But you just ask the question. I'm glad you brought it up because I hate getting unsolicited email. But I don't hate getting unsolicited email from people I care about. So again, I think it's a great question. It's a great conversation for the team. And it's just it's done on an individual basis.
Yeah, I guess it's more a question for me too, because everyone knows the clients a lot better than I do. So maybe you know.
Yeah,
I
think you're going to get a feel for it, and you'll get your gut feeling. Will know
yeah.
with this person, he's a blunt person that doesn't like touchy feely. No, we're not going to send him.
Yeah.
A happy birthday gift or whatever, and this person is a touchy-feely, appreciative person that likes to refer. We're going to send her some flowers on her birthday. Like you're right, and I agree with Rob. It is on a. If for example, if you went on your trip and told this guy, if the service and the people got the feel that you were just kind of want to be left alone, you didn't want to, and maybe they would get a feel, maybe communicate to each other, hey, he doesn't want you to check in at the pool every 5 minutes for a drink, or then they would get the feel for it. I agree that it is on a personalized basis, I think we're doing a good job. Whether it's, for example, there's a client that we have. That is a widow, and we send her flowers on her birthday, where we wouldn't do that for every client. So, you'll get a more of a feel of it, but feel free to ask Ashley or myself or anything if your gut is unsure or if you want more intel on the person.
Yeah.
Okay. Izzy, what you all have is a concierge practice for a limited number of people.
Yeah.
You can't offer this type of service to everyone. So part of being a concierge practice is everybody's a little bit different. I mean, you've got some things in your practice, like the contacts that are structure, but beyond that, treat everybody has a little different desire. So I think the communication will help you with that. Let me tell you something that I don't think works, Will. And that's getting a birthday card that's signed.
Yeah, we don't do that. Yeah, no.
A straight birthday card, it's just signed by the FA. I think that's just. I think that's worse than doing nothing. Other things that you might think about, and again, I'd like for you to think about it before our next meeting. Recognition of the birthday of the birth of a grandchild.
Yep.
You've already let the receptionist know a client's coming in. We've already talked about that. Special events, small client recognition events, knowing what they like to eat or drink before they come into the office. You've touched on that. One other thing is golfing with UBS folks. I mean, let's say a banker's coming into town or an analyst or an executive or whatever, taking somebody out to play, a couple clients out to play golf with somebody up, you know, higher up at UBS.
Yeah.
It's always a nice recognition. And I know we don't have to talk John into playing golf.
No, and he likes it.
Yeah, but just that just it those guys, those executives like getting out and meeting clients. It's just a great way to take your service to a different level. All right, one other thing I was going to get into, and I'll touch on it next time. This card that you all have, that's what, $495 a year. Do you all sell much of that?
We'll bring it up, and it's almost complimentary. But typically, with our banking relationships, what we do is we articulate that we have all the capabilities of a bank, if not more. But we understand that it's a pain in the butt if you have a existing relationship, let's say with X, Y, and Z bank, to do all those reoccurring and set up that banking stuff. But yes, we do, because John and Andrew both have the card, and it's very easy for them just to kind of just say, hey, I have the card. It's been a home run. We went to London last week, and we got in the lounge for free. It's whatever. But, yeah, if it comes up, they will solicit it. But I would say it's 50-50 with our clients. Some of the 50% have complete all banking capabilities with us, where 50% have had Bank of America since they graduated college, and so we don't disrupt that. But yes, we are completely comfortable with passing along that information, because it's a nice card, it's a thick one of those thick ones, and we also believe in the brand recognition, that every time you pull out that card and you see the UBS logo on a nice thick card, that it just kind of more intertwines them in the relationship.
Well, what you sent me on this first page, I mean, any airport club, global entry and TSA free, I mean, that's a big deal. Priority, a couple of membership to 1,000 airport lounges. I mean, this thing pay for itself over and over again if you've got people who travel.
Right, yeah, that's what, and it's been a home run so far. And then the clients also like that they use us for, basically Ashley and Izzy are the banking contacts, or they say, hey, my card got lost when I was in London. Can you overnight it? We call to our card services. They have one contact, and we get it overnighted to the hotel, and we've had that happen 3 or 4 times. So, yeah, for a service standpoint, it allows us to even be, they like that they're just dealing with us with almost absolutely everything with their finances.
Yeah, yeah, okay. All right. Well, appreciate the time. I think it's a good call. Learned a lot of things. You guys are doing a great job. I mean, I love the communication. I love what you're accomplishing.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. If you all could give a little thought to things you could do to take your service to that level 2, I'd like to discuss that next time.
Perfect. And we'll relay the call and the recording to John and Andrew, and hopefully we'll have some good news to update you on from this meeting that they're about to get back from.
Maybe you'll get free beer.
That's what I was joking. Free beer for life. Just we get a free beer card. That'd be a first if we could accept it. But I'd rather have the account, obviously. But that would be a nice perk to go along with it.
Get the account and you can buy your own beer, right?
Exactly. That's what we're gonna do.
All right. Good to talk with you.
Thank you very much, Rob.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.